compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Okay, we're back, and 2 hours to go. See how fast the first hour went, and I don't want you to miss out. If you'd like to be on the air, you need a second opinion, maybe. You want to get some advice, you want to vent. I mean, within reason, of course. 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. That number is sponsored by Catholic Order of Foresters. Let's go over to Denise now in Martinez, California. Hello, Denise.
Hi, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And I just am curious. I'm a new Catholic, and I have been, it's been put on my heart lately. My church does not receive the full Eucharist. We just get the body of Christ, not the blood. Mm. And is that a normal thing for all churches?
Yes. In fact, if you don't mind, I'd like to give you a little background, if I may.
Sure.
When at Mass, and by the way, what was your background? First of all, welcome home to the Catholic Church, Denise. I'm so happy for you. What was your background?
Thank you. My grandparents were Catholic, but my father and mother did not practice at all. So okay. I was raised pretty much Protestant, Presbyterian.
Okay. And so you were probably baptized when you were a child, I guess?
I actually wasn't. I didn't get baptized till about 10 years ago.
Okay. Okay, good. Well, I'm just thrilled for you. I'm so happy, and I want to welcome you home to the Catholic Church, Denise. And I'm all the more happy that you're listening to Relevant Radio, which is great. So here's the background I wanted to share with you. At the Mass, at the moment of transubstantiation, which it's not like one moment, it's over a period of several seconds, when the priest says, "This is my body," and this is part of the longer formula, and he says, "This is the chalice, this is the cup of my blood, which will be poured out for you and for many." At that point in the Mass is when the reality of the bread and the wine leave. The appearances remain. So it still looks like bread, still has the molecular properties of bread. What once was wine still has the alcoholic properties of wine, the texture, the color, all of those things remain. But the reality has now been replaced with the reality of Jesus Christ glorified, resurrected. And as we Catholics, I'm including you now, as we Catholics like to say, body, blood, soul, and divinity, meaning that all of Jesus in every aspect of his reality is present in the Holy Eucharist. And I know you know that, but it's important that we start there. So you're with me so far?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So you know that at the moment when the priest says the words of consecration, and then he elevates the host, you can adore, and you should adore Jesus in the host because it's no longer bread. I mean, that would be idolatry if it was just bread. But you're adoring Jesus substantially, sacramentally, truly present in the pure, in under the appearance of bread. Now, when you think about it, the chalice of the wine has not yet been consecrated. And you're adoring Jesus. He's fully there, body, blood, soul, and divinity. Now, a moment or two later, the words of consecration, they transubstantiate the wine in the chalice. It becomes the very body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus. But the reason I reference this is because Jesus is entirely there initially in the host before the contents of the chalice are consecrated. That happens, as I say, only a few moments afterward. And it's really one liturgical action, but just in terms of like moment by moment. So the entirety of Jesus is present in the host. If you receive only the host at Mass, and that's typical now because post-COVID, you're receiving all of Jesus. You're not missing any part of him. You're not getting like, well, this is only 50% of Jesus.
Right.
I want the other 50%. And it's important that all of us as Catholics remember that, because it's nice, and maybe nice is not quite the right word. It's a good thing if you're permitted to receive under both kinds, you know, the Eucharistic bread, which is no longer bread, and the precious blood in the chalice. But it's not necessary to receive all of Jesus. You receive all of him. Let's say that you didn't receive the host. and you just got a drop of the precious blood, you've received all of Jesus. You're not missing any part of him. You're not getting a 50% deal here, that kind of thing. But the beauty of receiving under both kinds is the enhancement of the symbolism of the body and the blood. Obviously, the body is something physical. The blood is some in human physiology is something liquid. So the wine, is, in an analogous way, because it's liquid, is like blood. And the host, because it's solid and dense, is like the body. But those are only analogies. So there's nothing wrong with desiring to receive under both kinds to heighten that symbolism and heighten the sense of the body and blood of Jesus, as long as you know that if you receive just the host, you received all of Jesus. You see where I'm coming from?
Okay. I see where you're coming from. I just keep going back to Jesus' words, you know, eat my body and drink my blood.
Right, right. There's a reason he said that.
Some churches do still do that.
Let's talk about that for a minute, though. The reason Jesus said that is he was speaking to priests. So he had newly ordained the apostles at the Last Supper. And so he wasn't speaking to a group of lay people, you know, like us. He was speaking to priests. And that's the part of the action of the priest at the altar in the person of Jesus. He does that. He eats and drinks as the Lord commanded. But that's one of those subtleties where he wasn't commanding eating and drinking to all people, but it was appropriate for those people.
Didn't he also do that to a large group of disciples also, not just the apostles?
Well, where he says those words, we have that in the Last Supper. We don't see Jesus say that in any other context in the New Testament.
Okay. Okay.
St. Paul picks up the story in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, beginning in verse 24. So if you want to read his description of this, and it's interesting because he wasn't even at the Last Supper.
Right.
He was still a persecutor, or would soon become one. But the Lord Jesus, he revealed this to St. Paul, and then St. Paul shares that. But yeah, so the words eat and drink refer to what Jesus said to the apostles, and we can do that. But I guess what I want to try to hammer home here is that you're not missing out on anything if you receive only the host.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. Yeah, I hope that that's helpful to you.
It is. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. Thank you, Denise. Yeah, parting thought in light of Denise's call, there is a heresy, a little known heresy. You don't hear too many people talk about it, but it's in Latin called utraquism. And utraquism or utraquism is, you would translate it from the Latin as both and. And it was a heresy that the church recognized early on. So we're talking about in the Middle Ages, where people, pious people, good people who love Jesus and they want to be, you know, united with him, they made the mistake of thinking that they had to have both and, both the host and the precious blood in order to receive all of Jesus. And that's one of the theological reasons, perhaps it was the most significant of the reasons why the church in the Latin rite of the church, so the Western church, started to not give lay people from the precious blood at communion, because they found, they being the bishops and popes and such, they found over time that this tendency toward the heresy of utraquism would creep in, and the mindset could be fostered in some people that they had to receive both in order to receive all of Jesus. So as a way to really drive home the reality that you do receive all of Jesus, body, blood, soul, and divinity, glorified and resurrected. This is not cannibalism. You're not gnawing on a dead body. It's Jesus as he is in heaven, body, blood, soul, and divinity, under the appearance of bread and wine, that when you receive only one or the other, you receive all. So just a little footnote from history. Let's go now to Susan in California. Hi, Susan.
Hi, how are you today?
Doing well, thanks.
Okay. Well, we have kind of an odd situation out here. My husband was not Catholic for 47 years after we got married.
Okay.
And he has, his family is not Catholic by and large. And so he has a niece who is married and has been married to her husband for like 10 or 15 years. But he has never wanted children. So they're not Catholic at all.
I don't want to get lost in the family relations here. So you and your husband hasn't been Catholic for those years or wasn't Catholic. And now we're talking about his nephew. Is that right?
His niece.
Oh, his niece.
Yeah,
okay.
His niece. His niece has wanted a baby lately. She's really, really, really wanted a baby. So she, because her husband did not want children, they are actually separated over this. And now she has wanted a baby so dearly that she has had AI, artificial insemination, to get pregnant. And it worked, and now she is pregnant, and she's throwing herself a baby shower, and her husband is out of the picture, and she thinks that he's going to be coming back. She thinks the husband is going to come back because when he sees how great the baby is.
Is the husband the father? I'm guessing not.
No, he's not.
I don't know what she's thinking.
I know. So anyway, she sent out invitations to her baby shower and has invited, all of us. I have five daughters, and even though my husband wasn't Catholic, we always went to Mass all together. And so he was, a pretty good father figure for those girls in practicing their faith and stuff. So all of them are good Catholics. And so this cousin of theirs is inviting them to the baby shower and me also to the baby shower. And we are trying to figure out, what the best approach to this would be. Should we just all bow out, or should we go out of compassion for this cousin who has wanted a baby so much?
Yeah. So she's had a very good goal in mind, having children, but she's gone about it the wrong way.
Exactly.
This is to me a dilemma, and I'll share with you how I approach it, Susan. The dilemma is, of course, this child on the way is entirely innocent and isn't guilty, obviously, of anything. So if by going to the shower you were intending to support the little one, Pampers, whatever you might give, There's nothing immoral about that. Your goal is to support this new life, give some help to the mom, and so on. And if you could accomplish that without celebrating how she got pregnant, then I could see, I could see a case to go and to try to help, because your intention is not to celebrate the sin that she committed to do this. The intention is to support, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't know, practically speaking, whether or not in her own sort of befuddled state, whether she would interpret this as a celebration of her bad decision, and whether or not it would, for her, kind of be like normalizing a bad situation or giving the impression that you approve of how she came to be in this situation. So the next question I have is, did you or your daughters ever communicate to her, this is wrong, you shouldn't have done this?
Yeah,
does she know that?
No. I'm pretty sure she doesn't know at all. Yeah, in my husband's family, I don't think they ever even talk about religion except to say how silly it is to believe in God.
What is your relationship and your daughter's relationships with her? Is it close?
No, not close. She lives, pretty far away from us, and they don't really have a lot in common. When the grandparents died, she did come to the funeral service, but I think we, a few pleasantries and stuff, and this was
before
she was pregnant and all that, but we're not close, no.
Well, that seems to me, Susan, from where I stand, to be sort of like a road sign pointing in the direction that I would go if I were you, and that is I wouldn't go maybe send a box of Pampers or, you know, something for the baby. And, mm-hmm. and you know, God bless this child, you know, something, something, something like that. Because mm-hmm. my concern would be by going, you would give her the impression that you're celebrating something she did that is not worth celebrating.
Yeah,
you celebrate the exactly. baby, but not how the baby got
right.
here.
Right. Exactly. Yep. Yeah, that's what I was actually thinking, too. My daughters, I don't know if they're really looking to me for advice or anything, mm-hmm. but I'm pretty sure, I just told them that I was actually not going to go. But uh-huh. I think they are thinking that they will go. So maybe
if you wanted to share this segment of the program with them, with your daughters, I mean, they could factor that in as they deliberate. Mm-hmm. Once the show is over, about an hour after it's over, the archive gets posted. So if you wanted, so you'd be looking at the first half of the second hour, and you could just grab mm-hmm. the link and text it and say, hey, we talked about this situation on the show today, and they could listen and think about it, and maybe that may or may not modify what they plan to do. But personally, if it were me, I would have qualms about going if it's going to be this rah-rah, this boom-bah, isn't it great? I've got this baby, you know, kind of celebrating what she did. I wouldn't want mm-hmm. to validate that personally.
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering if I ought to actually, you know, just be direct. I mean, I'm a pretty direct person. Mm-hmm. But be direct and send her a note or something and ask her if she has any idea how gravely wrong this is,
yeah.
or it just was what she did. Yeah. And I don't know. I figure since we don't have much of a relationship anyway, that it would be kind of pointless and would probably drive the family apart even more, you know, than
it probably would. Yeah. Now she's not Catholic. I think you mentioned there's no Catholic faith over there. Yeah.
No.
So you probably come across to her like a Jesus freak and, oh my gosh, this crazy woman, my aunt, everything's a sin with my aunt, and look at her go. I mean, that's probably mm-hmm, what would happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't really know what my daughters are going to tell her, if any of them. I tell you, they are so sweet, though. If any of them could actually, you know, get through to her and help her see that, you know, there is a God.
That would be wonderful.
He loves you so much.
Yeah, that'd be wonderful.
And there, you know, there are rules for all of us and stuff. They, I think, could actually do that in a really loving way. I mean,
well,
I talked to one of my daughters about it, and she pointed out how desperately women want children. You know, when they do, because she herself was infertile for 10 mm-hmm. years after they got married, mm-hmm. and she even asked me. She said, "Okay, Mom, if we weren't going to be able to have children unless we had IVF, what would you say?" And I told her, I said, well, maybe you should consider adoption.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do IVF. Don't do it.
Right.
And so she knows. She does know. But she also knows how desperately her cousin probably wanted a baby.
Understandable.
And so she is so sweet and so loving and maybe could actually get through to her.
Very, very possibly. So lead with love, obviously, love and compassion, encouragement. God loves you and he wants you to be happy. If one of your daughters can convey that message to her and help her move in the right direction, so much the better. Interesting. Well, thank you, Susan. I hope this works out. I'll be right back.
Yo.
Big time gratitude to Charity Mobile for sponsoring the Patrick Madrid Show. They're a pro-life cell phone company with nationwide coverage and no contracts. You can choose from the latest phones or bring your own. New customers can mention Patrick for a free phone or another offer. info@charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Ah, I see what you did there, Cyrus. Hey, you've heard of the Cars, haven't you?
I have heard of them. Yeah. And what do you got?
Well, Ben Orr, the bass player, he died in 2000. Pancreatic cancer. But he was in the Cars, bass player, lead singer for a number of their songs.
Yeah, a little birdie told me that you're reading his autobiography. I don't know if it's an autobiography. Or
biography.
Biography.
Yeah, biography. It's called Let's Go. I'm just about done and read it pretty thoroughly over the weekend. I have a few pages yet to go. But yeah, there's an example. If I've never told you, just he was a very talented guy, very likable, very, you know, kind of humble guy, but he had a lot of talent. And he had just this kind of meaningless life. A lot of money, a lot of fans, a lot of recognition. And reading the biography of him really kind of brings home to me that if your life is just about enjoying pleasure and making a success of yourself in that regard, but if there's nothing else to it, what's the point? And, you know, sadly, he died of pancreatic cancer. Kind of post-career, he was real big with the Cars and all that. And he did other things too, but then when he died of pancreatic cancer, that's it, you know. He had been married 3 or 4 times. Not a lot to show for it. Some people say, oh, come on, he had a lot of music. Yeah, that's true. But I mean, like in your own life, though, your own, you know, you as a person and some relationship with God, these kind of stories. Tom Petty comes to mind, Cyrus, and I know you've heard of him before. You've heard of Tom Petty, haven't you?
Yeah, these people get such big fame and fortune and people love them, but there's still this hole in their hearts mm-hmm. that they're trying to fill, and they fill it with music or, I mean, in some cases, drugs, mm-hmm. marriages, but they're missing the one thing that can actually fulfill them.
Yeah, that is very true. And it's, you know, it's the perennial story. I mean, if it's true of him, it's true of a billion other people. The thing I think about when I read a story like his is just, you know, God has blessed him with so many talents. He was, you know, popular and all that. But in the end, what does it mean? You know, if you don't have some overriding purpose for it, then when you're dead and gone, you're dead and gone. So just a thought. I was thinking about that because I'm just about done with the book. 888-914-9149. How about Ryan now in Nashville? Hello, Ryan.
Hey, Patrick. Can you hear me?
I can.
Awesome. I just wanted to leave a comment for the woman who called in at the top of the hour. I believe her name was Denise about the Eucharist and the having only the body or the blood and in the Mass.
Right. Yeah,
I'm also a new convert, and I just wanted to leave a comment about that because that was one of the things that I struggled with, you know, going to Mass for the first time and not really understanding, you know, in my Protestant church, we always had the bread and the wine or grape juice rather, but
right.
Why does it only the bread in the Catholic church? And I had a friend explain to me, you know, if God is infinite and you receive any ounce of God in the Eucharist, of Jesus in the Eucharist, then you've received all of them. I mean, it's not like you can receive a sliver of infinity. It's all or nothing, right?
Right.
I just thought that would be a little bit helpful.
Yeah, I mean, this is an inexhaustible topic, and the points that you're making are very good ones, Ryan. And it's for the average Catholic, and of course we're aiming to change this with the upcoming Eucharistic Congress in July to try to heighten everybody's awareness of how Jesus is present to us in the Holy Eucharist. But it is a good point. In other words, you can't divide the Lord and his divinity and his humanity. You can't divide it. You can't separate it out. Certainly in Holy Communion, as you say, this is all of him and his infinitude and in his created human nature. So it's all together. And I have a feeling that because this is a topic that's rarely, if ever, talked about, I mean, it's not the topic that you would hear a priest typically preaching on at Mass. It'd be a good topic to preach on, but you don't really hear about it very much. And people just don't know unless they listen to relevant radio like you do.
All right. Well,
that's good.
Wanted to ask one more little thing. If there's any books on the history of how communion came about, because I know in that same conversation we talked about, you know, there was once a practice of dipping. You know, there were times when people only received the blood and mm-hmm. not the body. So if you know any resources.
I do, yeah. So I would recommend a book called The Hidden Manna by Father James O'Connor. It's published by Ignatius Press. It's really good. I first read it probably shortly after it came out 30 plus years ago. And it's very helpful on this and many other topics related to it. There are other really fine books on the Eucharist, but this is one that I recommend often. You mentioned dipping. That's an interesting way of describing it, because that's what it is. But the term for it is intinction. And I saw this probably really for the first time in the mid-1970s, where the priest would have a kind of stylized ciborium, more of a not the large cup-like vessel, but something more like a bowl. And in the center of this metal bowl was screwed down nice and tight a little chalice, like a little chalice that would hold the precious blood. And so intinction is where the priest would dip the host into the precious blood and put it on your tongue. And I suspect the reason that that fell out of vogue, not that it was super widespread. I mean, it was kind of widespread in the 70s, as I recall. But I think the reason that that sort of fell out of favor is because as communion in the hand became more and more popular, something I myself think is a bad idea, but that's just my own opinion. There's no way to do that practically if you're practicing intinction, because if the priest is dipping the host into the precious blood, he necessarily has to put it on the tongue. And in some quarters, receiving communion on the tongue was deemed to be too traditional. This is too old school. This is too pre-Vatican II, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that that may be one big reason why intinction sort of didn't gain ground and become very common. Now, in the Eastern churches, so let's say the Byzantine rite of the Catholic Church, or even in the Eastern Orthodox churches that are separated from the Catholic Church, they practice something similar, but rather than intinction, the Eucharistic bread and the Eucharistic wine, what becomes the precious blood, are commingled in the chalice. So the bread and the wine, and we're calling it bread and wine. We know that it's the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus under the appearances of bread and wine. They're mixed together and then spooned into the mouths of the communicants. So if you ever were to attend, let's say, a Byzantine divine liturgy, that's what you'll see. People come forward, they sort of tilt their heads back a little bit, arms crossed over their chest, and the priest or the deacon will spoon both the precious blood and the Eucharistic bread into their mouths. And intinction in the Catholic Church, in the Western part of the Catholic Church, was something similar to that, but still slightly different. And these are all things that are taken up in that book, The Hidden Manna. So I have a feeling you're going to enjoy it. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Dorothy in Green Bay. Good morning, Dorothy.
Good morning, Patrick. I would like to relay a conversation I had. I have a small business, and I have signs in my window, some political, some religious. Okay. And a woman had come in to pick up her items, and she was commenting on a small Trump sign that I had and asked what I liked about him. And I said, well, he's not a politician. He's pro-life. And she said, well, I'm pro-life too. But who's going to take care of those babies? Who's going to feed them? Who's going to clothe them? And I said, well, I'm kind of thinking God's got a plan. And she's like, no, that's not going to happen. So I said, well, if the government would give all the money they give to Planned Parenthood and give it to these women to help them educate their babies, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, maybe that would help. And she's like, oh, no. So we kind of went back and forth, very civil, for a few minutes. And as she was leaving, she stopped in the doorway and she turned around and she said to me, well, I'll just stick with my Catholic faith. And I said, yep, me too. And she turned around. She had this horrified look on her face. And she said, you're Catholic? Whatever happened to make you a Republican? I said, I'm pro-life. Well, she said, people better start digging in their pockets to help those babies. My question is, how do we educate our I mean, she's like my age. I'm 75. And how do we educate people in our Catholic parishes that it's just wrong? It just seems like there's no catechesis on this anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess there is and there isn't. I mean, the Catholic Church of late, certainly in the past, say, 40 years, has dramatically ramped up a lot of catechesis about the evil of abortion. The U.S. bishops, mm-hmm. many priests, the March for Life, 40 Days for Life. I mean, there are many very overt Catholic witnesses against the evil of abortion. Thanks be to God. We can rejoice in that, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
But I'll offer you my perspective on this for what it's worth. And you're older than I am. And so you say you're 75, I'm turning 64 this year. So, you know, we're not the same age, but you're not that much older. Mm-hmm. But you'll remember even better than I do, because I was a kid when this was really beginning to unfold. But as you'll remember, the Democratic Party in these United States was very much a party of Catholics and the Catholic folk, especially the clergy, for the longest time, because it dovetailed in its efforts to stick up for the working man. So in the era when labor unions were actually not corrupt in many respects, a real problem in society the way they subsequently, some of them became, there was a real need to protect the rights of the working man, the little guy. And since so many Catholic folk who had come over from Germany and from Ireland and Mexico and places all over the world, much of the blue-collar working class population were Catholic. And so the church, although never formally aligned with the Democrats, this is post-Civil War, keep in mind, because in the years leading up to the Civil War, and for many, many decades after the Civil War, the Democratic Party was the party of slavery. It was the party of white supremacy, and it was the Republicans who were the abolitionists. They were the ones who championed against slavery. And of course, as time goes on, political parties change their focuses and whatnot. So by the time you get into the 20th century, say in the 20s and 30s and into the 40s, in the minds of many Catholics, they associated the Democratic Party as the party that seemed to embody the Catholic ethos and moral principles of helping working families, helping the little guy, protecting his rights and so forth. Well, abortion came along, as you know, in 1973 as a watershed moment in which the country, through the Roe versus Wade decision, it enshrined abortion as a so-called right, that women could have the right, quote unquote, to choose an abortion. And this is where a real convulsion began to take place, because that was a wholesale departure from in terms of the Democratic Party's approach to things. And there were candidates for higher office and those who held higher office, people like Al Gore, for example, who was publicly pro-life when he was a senator. And so was Ted Kennedy. He was publicly pro-life. In fact, if you do a search, you can find on Google pictures of letters that they wrote to constituents in which they were asked about their opinion on abortion. And people like Al Gore, of all people, and Ted Kennedy, they were more or less stalwart in their defense of unborn human life, in their opposition to abortion. Well, what happened was that some Catholic priests, Jesuits, by the way, they made a visit to the Kennedy compound in Hyannisport in the late 1960s. So this is post assassination of JFK. And they went there to persuade the Kennedy family to embrace abortion as a political cause. And they gave them all the malarkey about how you can be a good Catholic and you can accept abortion and all that. I have a whole article that I posted on my website. We'll get a link to that. So you have all the specifics, the details, the names of the people, the priests and others that were involved. It's all well documented. Well, what happened was when these priests were successful in persuading the Kennedy family, and that, of course, mainly included Ted Kennedy. The upshot of it was it began to give political cover for other Catholic politicians in the Democratic Party to go down the same road and to actually to espouse abortion the way Ted Kennedy began to do, as something that is good and moral, and you know, it's maybe not something that we would want, but it's something that we can tolerate, we can live with. And all of that's well documented. And that's where this transition, I believe, really began to happen, where the Democratic Party had morphed away from, at least ostensibly, its effort to stick up for the little guy. I mean, they still give lip service to that. But it became the party of abortion. And the thing to remember is that, like, the Democratic Party of your parents' era and my parents' era was not the same as it is now. And so there is a strange evolution, if we want to call it that, of how Catholics have been caught in the middle, and without really recognizing what was going on early on, their loyalty to the Democratic Party. And this is why so many bishops historically have been Democrats, and so many priests have been Democrats, and the civil rights movement, all those things that were part of the Democratic Party approach, they were sort of swept away in the face of the abortion juggernaut. And I think residually, this is why many Catholics, even to this day, who haven't really thought it through, and they certainly don't know the history of what happened, retain a kind of allegiance to the Democratic Party in a way that they never did for the Republican Party. Now, don't get me wrong, the Republican Party disgusts me in many respects. So I'm not here to promote it or to defend it or anything like that. I'm just saying, since you asked about the Democratic Party, there's an aspect of it. And I have to take a break, but I'm going to quote to you a little bit of this article that we will give a link to. So this is where I'm speaking here before I link to the article. I wrote this back in 2009. The Wall Street Journal has a fascinating and deeply saddening article exploring the reasons behind the Kennedy family's staunch pro-abortion position. Believe it or not, Ted Kennedy used to be pro-life. So how did he and all the other prominent Kennedys swing so far in the opposite direction? For that matter, what about some of the other Catholic pro-abortion people recently in office, people like Mario Cuomo and Nancy Pelosi and Tom Daschle? Now, Cuomo and Daschle are gone now, but you get the idea. This article in the Wall Street Journal reveals that it was an intentional, systematic, concerted effort on the part of a group of dissenting Catholic theologians, including Father Richard McCormick, Father Charles Curran, Father Joseph Fuchs, Father Robert Drynan, and Father John Courtney Murray, who spent a good deal of time with the Kennedys in the mid-60s employing a bogus moral theology argument to convince them that they could accept and promote abortion with a clear conscience. Once this was accomplished, these same Judas priests, those are my words, undertook to literally coach the Kennedys on what to say and how to vote in favor of abortion in their public lives. That's the preamble. So if you're interested in reading that, we'll get a link posted to it. But it's a shocking tale, and it helps explain a lot of what has happened in the last 40, 50 years in terms of American politics and the Catholic Church. So check it out. Thanks for the call. I'll be right back. Big time gratitude to Charity Mobile for sponsoring the Patrick Madrid Show. They're a pro-life cell phone company with nationwide coverage and no contracts. You can choose from the latest phones or bring your own. New customers can mention Patrick for a free phone or another offer. info@charitymobile.com.
Patrick Madrid is on Coast to Coast on Relevant Radio.
I was ready.
Yeah. It's still good. It's still good.
It is good. Yeah, it's good. So go ahead and play it again.
Helps if I turn.
Anytime, Cyrus.
Helps
anytime.
If I turn the mic on.
Patrick Madrid is on Coast to Coast on Relevant Radio.
That's it.
Yeah, I think it works.
And you know why I was ready for that? Because I recommended it to you.
That's how I knew.
That's good. I think good. We got an email.
Should we educate people on this?
We just did, so they can go to Friday's show. If you're like, what in the world? Why is that funny?
Well, we didn't play Maggie, though. We didn't play Maggie on Friday.
All right.
So just, okay, if you're new to the show and you want to understand what in the world is happening here, this should explain it.
At the intersection of faith and culture, The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Self-explanatory. It's self-explanatory. I'll never tire of that. 888, thank you, Cyrus. 888-914-9149. We'll go now to, where is that one I wanted to get to? Yeah, Raphael in San Diego. Good morning, Raphael.
Hey, good morning. Hey, I just want to join the conversation in regards to abortion. Mm-hmm. So you're right about the older generation and the Labor Party and with immigrants. Mm-hmm. My dad, he used to always tell me vote Democrats because they're pro-labor. They're for the little guy.
Yeah.
But as time went on, I was a union steward for 16 years.
Ronald Reagan used to be a Democrat. That tells you a lot, doesn't it? Go ahead, Raphael.
So I was a union steward for 16 years. I convinced a lot of people to vote Democrat. And a kid challenged me and he said, why are you voting Democrat? And another person challenged me. I said, you know, you're Catholic and you have more in common with the Republican Party than you do with the Democrat Party. And I said, well, I don't know about that. I'm pro-labor and that's all it is to me. Mm-hmm. Well, eventually I watched a little movie and I read a book with Mother Teresa. And she was constantly battling with Hillary Clinton. And they had a compromise where I think she couldn't get her to stop being pro-abortion. But she said, so for every one of those Planned Parenthood places you open up, I want you to open up an orphanage. Mm. And so that was something that kind of really Saul Alinsky, how he infiltrated the Catholic Church. And he infiltrated labor unions. And so everything those guys were telling me that were kind of questioning me and everything, it kind of, I think it was kind of solidified, you know, after, you know, realizing I do have more in common with Republicans than I do with Democrats the new Democrats.
Yeah. So the Democratic Party has morphed into something truly astonishing when you consider, you know, before, and keeping in mind, of course, that the Democratic Party was the party of slavery and the party of Jim Crow laws and the party of oppressing and suppressing black people for so long. That's just a fact of history. But then it changed, you know, kind of sort of changed. And now it's no longer, I think, what, like I mentioned Ronald Reagan, he was a Democrat until 1962 when he changed to the Republican Party because he could see the way things were changing. But my point is, in response to your comment, Raphael, is that we should never allow our faith to become politicized, our Catholic faith become politicized, nor should we allow our political proclivities to become our religion. And sadly, in this country, I think that has happened in a widespread manner in which many people who are Catholic have confused their faith in Jesus with their political affinities. And that's a bad thing. It's a destructive thing because then we lose sight of what really matters, which is we're followers of Jesus and we have to live and act and vote according to those principles. And I think a lot of that is lost on some people these days. I'll give you the final word, though, Raphael.
Well, yeah, and so one thing my brother told me, he said that he votes on the issues, not on the candidates or the parties. And so I think that's kind of like what I do now. I do not worship any politician. I only worship Jesus Christ.
And, that's right.
And that's who I follow.
That's right. Yeah, that is exactly right. Well, I'm with you on that, Raphael. Thank you for that. 888-914-9149. How about Jeff now in Roseville, California? Hi, Jeff. Welcome.
Hey there. It's crazy. My wife texted me and she
was listening, and like four or five callers ago, it was my aunt on the phone, and she was talking about my sister, who went through in vitro and fertilization, and the baby shower is coming up.
I remember that call.
I wanted to call in just because it has been really challenging for me. I'm the only child in my family. So that's my younger sister. I'm the only child mm-hmm. in the family that's Catholic. And it's been interesting. My Aunt Sue, who called, you know, she's been Catholic forever. And you know, I think her and I and her kids have a bit more of a relationship because of that now. But we're definitely on the outskirts when it comes mm-hmm. to the rest of the family. And okay. baby shower's coming up. And I think what's tough for me and not going is that my children really have an affinity toward my sister. Mm-hmm. And my daughter, my oldest daughter especially, is really excited for her to have a baby. And we haven't had the opportunity, my wife and I haven't had the opportunity to really talk to them about how this came to be. But yeah. I think my wife and I are still struggling with how we want to approach it because, you know, I love my sister.
Mm-hmm. How old is she? I don't think I asked your aunt when she called in.
So, she was born in 87, 3 years. So I would say she's 37.
Okay. And, you know, your aunt made a comment about how she was under the impression that your sister might, or that your sister thinks that her estranged husband might come back to her by her having a baby. And that doesn't seem likely at all to me. I mean, I understand her desire to heal her marriage and to have a yeah. child. Those are all good goals, no doubt about it. But I was just going to say, I just sort of trailed off there, but I mean, this is obviously not the way to go about it.
My understanding was that my sister has been wanting a baby for so long, and that I think was one of the main reasons why her and her husband did split up, was because he didn't want to do that. And I had a phone conversation with my sister about it because she felt some weirdness the last family event we had together. And she said, you didn't really talk to me very much. I just want to make sure we're okay. And I said, you know, having a hard time with the decision that you made. I was like, I still love you as a brother, but the decision that you made, I can't get on board with it. So I'm having a hard time moving forward and figuring out what type of relationship you and I can have. And also, you know, for the baby, baby didn't choose any of this. And so my thought is, you know, how do I support the baby to an extent as far as just a male figure in their life and all of that, and make sure that there's a clear boundary, I guess.
Yeah. I have a feeling, Jeff, and only you could really say for sure, that I bet some of this is puzzling to your sister because she's not a Catholic. She doesn't have that background, kind of looking at this through the moral theology lens. So it may be that for her, she just doesn't see a problem at all. Like, why are these people all up in arms? I mean, I have a baby. Isn't that great? Why can't they celebrate? And maybe it's because, and maybe you have, or maybe one of the other family has, but perhaps what she needs is for someone to sit down and walk her through the moral implications of what happened so that she can understand, now I see. Why are they all, you know, unhappy about this? Maybe she just doesn't see it. What do you think?
Well, I think that's a good point that you make. But what I will say is that when I talk to her, I think there's a pretty clear understanding of why, like myself, I don't agree with the decision because I made that clear to her. And I think her mentality is literally just everyone can live how they want to live. And, you know, I don't sense any sort of judgment from her. She said, you know what? She's like, we can agree to disagree. And I understand. And she's like, if you aren't going to come to the baby shower, it's going to be really hard for me, but I get it. And so mm-hmm. I think she just sort of, you know, I think that's just her reality. And, and I don't know how many conversations I could have. Admittedly, that's not a role that I've played a lot, in my life, as far as sharing with people my faith. I don't know. maybe lack the confidence, but it's just tough because I, you know, it's my sister.
Oh, and you love her. Understandable. And yeah. I'm sure your aunt and your cousins, they all love her too. And they want her to be happy. Well, I'll pray for what it's worth, Jeff. I'll pray that there's some space in the middle of all this where she could begin to find out what the moral implications are that might help her see. And ideally, maybe she will come all the way into the Catholic Church. And, you know, we will love and accept and celebrate this baby who did nothing wrong, as you said. But at the same time, if she can get right with God and live happily ever after, wouldn't that be wonderful? That's my prayer, Jeff.
Thank you. I'd love that. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling in. Boy, this is like three-dimensional chess. Interesting, that's for sure. We have 1 hour to go. It's going to go quickly. So if you've been thinking about calling, call now, 888-914-9149. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.